Today, Sunday the 2nd of May, is International Dawn Chorus Day. Derek Mooney and the Mooney Goes Wild team join us now for the next 6 hours on Radio 1 for RTE's annual celebration of the Dawn Chorus.
Good morning. What you're listening to is the song of the Blackbird. Not live, I recorded this last Tuesday morning at approximately 4:45 a.m., just as the first glimmer of light was in the sky and dawn was breaking, over Deer Park in Mount Merion, not a million miles away from where I live. You're very welcome to the annual marathon broadcast of the Dawn Chorus. For the next 6 hours here on RT Radio 1 and across Europe with our partners in the European Broadcasting Union, we will take you on a melodious journey from darkness into light as the birds wake up and burst into song. We're delighted that you can be with us for this year's programme, during which we will explore the shared natural heritage of the Celtic world. Joining us are our colleagues in BBC Northern Ireland, BBC Wales, BBC Scotland. We have reporters in Brittany, in Cornwall and the Isle of Man. The birds won't be the only ones making music today, as we'll be joined by Paddy Glacken and Donal Lunny, two of Ireland's most acclaimed traditional musicians, bringing us a selection of tunes in celebration of our feathered friends. From 4 a.m, we will be live from Kuskany Marsh Nature Reserve in Cove. Local ornithologist Jim Wilson and Birdwatch Ireland's Niall Hatch will be standing alongside me. We'll be reaching out to you, our listeners. We want to hear from you this morning. We want to listen to your Dawn Chorus. So, if you've got a mobile phone, just make a short recording. And later, we'll give you a WhatsApp number where you can send that recording to and we can listen to the birds singing where you are. We'll be catching up with our regular Mooney Goes Wild panellists, Eric Dempsey in Wicklow, Terry Flanagan in Dublin 15. And right now, we're going to say hello to Aina Nealana. Good morning, Aina. Where will you be between 4 and 7 a.m. this morning?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, I won't be in Mealaba, that's for sure. I'll be in a woodland in West Clare, and I'll be really, really hoping to hear the cuckoo. The cuckoo has been reported in several places around here in the last few days, and sometimes they call very early in the morning. We've had them on other dawn choruses. So my money is on the cuckoo, Derek, and with any luck, I should be hearing him between 4:30 and 5 a.m. this morning.
Thank you, Aina. Looking forward to the cuckoo. Lots of cuckoo sightings been reported to Mooney Goes Wild in the past few weeks. As you know, we've had a shout out for the cuckoo on the radio programme. Let's say hello now to Richard Collins. Richard, where will you be this morning as darkness turns to light?
Good morning, Derek. I'm here at my home in Malahide in North County Dublin. It's pitch black right now, but 3.5 hours' time, the sun will come in over the sea and it will be dawn. Dawn is a very special time for me. It's a very philosophical time, a time of reflection. Now, we haven't all that many songbirds at my location, but what we lack in song here, I hope the coastal birds may make up for us. Terns, curlew, there's a curlew or two here, and the whimbrel, perhaps. Whimbrels, the maybirds, are passing up the coast right now from Africa on their way to their Nordic breeding grounds. So plenty to look forward to in Malahide, Derek, and I will speak to you again at about 4:30.
Oh, I'd like to hear the whimbrel, I have to be honest and say. Thank you, Richard. We'll catch up with you again later on. To ease you into the day, we'll also be broadcasting 3 special documentaries from the Mooney Goes Wild archive about 3 very special birds, the eider duck, the white stork and the curlew. So let's begin there. The curlew is one of Ireland's most iconic yet most threatened species. Its mournful cry is synonymous with the Irish wilderness, but sadly today is seldom heard. In this programme we explore why it has become so rare and take an in-depth look at efforts being made to save it. The curlew. It's a wet and windy morning in November. I'm at Dublin's North Bull Island, one of Ireland's most celebrated and important sites for birds, particularly so during the winter months, when ducks, geese, and especially waders migrate here to escape the harsh weather that has taken hold further north. From October until April, it literally becomes a vast restaurant for thousands of wetland birds. The presence of so many of these migrant wading birds, flocking here from breeding locations as diverse as Arctic Canada, Greenland, Iceland, Scandinavia, and Siberia to find food, is truly remarkable. Not least because it happens in the heart of a bustling city. This is one of the key reasons that North Bull Island is the jewel in the crown of the Dublin Bay UNESCO biosphere. Indeed, thanks largely to this long, narrow, sandy island, Dublin is the only European capital that boasts a UNESCO biosphere reserve. In front of me, there are hundreds of waders. Beautiful, long-legged, long-billed birds that probe mud and sand for food. But I've come here to see one in particular, the largest of them all, the Eurasian curlew. Wintering waders have a reputation for being difficult to tell apart, but the curlew poses no such challenge. Its almost outlandishly long beak curves dramatically downwards, while those of our other wintering waders, clothed in similar dress of mottled brown or grey feathers, have ramrod straight bills. When seen clearly, there is no mistaking a curlew for any other species.
The first thing that strikes you about the curlew is the large size. They're a big bird. And even though they are so large, the colour patterns of them, they're brown, black spots and white spots. And you would imagine a bird that big would stand out. But when they're in the grass, they almost blend in perfectly with the grass. And of course, it's the long bill that makes the curlew so distinctive. It has the longest bill or beak of any of our shorebirds. It's a long, down-curved beak. People often ask, how can you tell a male from a female? And the females are about 20% bigger than the males. The females are the ones that if you look here at this particular group, you'll see several large birds among them. They're the females. And the females even have longer beaks. They have a wingspan when they fly of approximately 1 metre. So they're a big, big bird. Long, bluey, grey legs. And these are the birds that hunt deep into the mud. Of course, with shorebirds, as we know, the length of the beak depends on how far you can go into the mud. So the curlew goes in often sideways and probes deep into the mud looking for lugworms and ragworms. And it's perfectly suited for being out on pastures as well, because they can use that beak to dig up earthworms and any larvae that may well be in the ground. So these are highly adapted birds, the largest shorebird that we have.
The curlew was once a common and familiar sight in the Irish landscape, breeding in upland bogs and traditional meadows in the summer, then flocking to coastal estuaries, beaches and mudflats in the winter. Sadly, today, this charismatic bird finds itself threatened with extinction, its population plummeting rapidly. Renowned author, lecturer and ornithologist Eric Dempsey has been watching and surveying the waders of North Bull Island for decades. And in that time, he has gained a great insight into changes in their population dynamics.
We're on the North Bull Island, on the causeway of the North Bull Island. And just looking north, the tide is on the way in. And in front of us are loads and loads of shorebirds. And we've shell ducks and widgeon and teal here, some pintail and shoveler. But the bird that has always captured me at this particular spot is a large roost of curlew, which every winter, this is the area where the curlew congregate on the north side of the North Bull Island. And this particular group builds up over the winter time. I've been looking at curlews, doing counts for curlews when I was doing the Birdwatch Ireland counts on the North Bull Island. And this particular section, this group would peak at around 350 birds roosting. Of course, you see, the problem is, Derek, this is what creates the false illusion of curlews. You read in the newspapers, you tell people that curlews are in danger. Mm-hmm. And people are looking out and say, well, look, there's 350 of them in that little group. There's nothing wrong with curlews. But if you can imagine that those particular birds that we're looking at right now, most of them, if not all of them, are from Scotland or Scandinavia or even further north. So Ireland is a big wintering ground because of our temperate, mild, windy weather as we have here today.
And it's a swirling
wind. And it's bitingly cold as well.
Yes.
But, you know, all of these birds come to Ireland because we don't freeze over. So a lot of the birds will migrate out of areas that freeze over so they can gain access to the soft mud. And because we have so many estuaries and so many wetlands, people feel that curlews are a common bird. And you walk along anywhere and you'll hear the curlew, you know, that beautiful... They're named curlews, of course, from the call. Curlew! Curlew! That's their almost alarm call. But they're best known for that lovely rolling... It's a beautiful... To me, that's the sound of winter. That is the sound of winter. And you walk along a place like this and you see, you know, maybe a couple of hundred curlews. You say, what's the problem with curlews? But here's the thing. I've also been doing a lot of survey work throughout the summers for the last few years. Out on areas like, you know, the Midland Bogs and the Upland Hills, bogland areas, wetland areas, where 30 years ago, that lovely rolling call was part of the summer. The bogs are silent now. Curlews are not out there. In fact, a big study of curlew breeding populations in Ireland took place in the last couple of years. And there's less than 140 breeding pairs of curlew left. So we're looking at about 300 birds out here, Derek, out on the mudflats on the North Pole Island. If I got those and said, that is the entire population of curlews in Ireland, people would suddenly go, good God, that's frightening. Mm. But that group that we see right now is more than the entire breeding population that Ireland has now. And curlews were such a part of the summer sounds out on the boglands. You know, we had corncrakes at one stage and cuckoos. But that rolling call of curlew is gone from most places. And the real sadness about that for me, Derek, is that people leaving the country, they carried, in the past, they would carry sounds with them. It was part of who we were and where we came from. You know, there's a famous ad where he's sitting in the desert, your man is writing back to his you know, and you could fry an egg on the stones here if you only had an egg. And the way Sally O'Brien might look at you and all that sort of stuff. But in that he says, and the cry of the curlew.
The curlew, yeah.
Now, why would he say that? It's because it's part of his homeland. It's part of where he comes from. It's a sound that he has carried. And to me, the great sadness is that young people won't have that. People who will emigrate maybe to the Middle East like that guy did, he won't carry the sound of the curlew with him because the sound of the curlew in summer is gone. It's no longer there. We have forestation going on our uplands and on our bogs, you know, Sitka spruce. We have the draining of the boglands. We have a lot of the cutting of the boglands. And of course, one of the problems putting in forests, especially, you know, Sitka spruce, besides all the greenhouse emissions and all that, is that you provide perches for predators. Curlews nest on the ground. They sit tight on the ground. That perfectly camouflaged plumage is designed for sitting out in a moorland, unseen. Big, huge bird like that, that's, you know, it's a tall shorebird, just sits into the grass, it disappears. Its eggs, perfectly camouflaged to look like the grass in the moorlands. The chicks, tiny little things, you know, almost independent immediately, walking around. Perfectly camouflaged, beautiful buff and black spots that just blend in. But the trouble is, if you have a predator, like a hooded crow or a raven, sitting up on a Sitka spruce that shouldn't be there in a bogland in its natural form, they can watch where the adults are. They can watch where the chicks are. They can watch where the eggs are. So, you know, predation is a big problem for curlews. And, you know, even an awful lot of the upland bogs are just being, you know, munched away by sheep. So a lot of this precious habitat that curlews depend on are being lost in Ireland. Do you know the numbers in the last 30 years of breeding birds have plummeted by as much as 96%? 96% of the breeding population. Only a handful of chicks get out each year. So the Irish population is in big, big trouble. And for me, the sadness would be is that a bird like curlew would just slip away, unseen, unheard. Can you imagine a summer out in a moorland without the cry of the curlew? Well, it's happening all around us now. I've been all over the country doing work on midland bogs and upland bogs and lowland bogs and all over the country, where 20, 30 years ago curlews were present, and they're not present anymore. It fills me with sadness, to be quite honest with you. And it drives me to try and, let's see what we can do here. Let's see what we can do to protect this very iconic species.
The curlew is a robust brown bird, roughly the size of a crow, but with much longer legs, and as we've heard, a very long, down-curved bill. Its brown plumage is streaked and mottled all over, affording it perfect camouflage in its heather-strewn breeding habitat, where it nests on the ground. Highly secretive when breeding, it was rarely seen. But just like the corncrake, was well known to most rural dwellers in Ireland on account of its voice. Its mournful, piercing cry was, for a great many people, the quintessential sound of Wild Ireland, a wonderfully evocative, plaintive refrain that worked its way into the national psyche and was felt to connect us to something almost supernatural. This remarkable sound is actually what gave the bird its name. It was variously described as Corlee or Curlee, and eventually evolved in speech to become Curlew. The bird's Irish name is Crutoch, meaning shapely or beautiful, but also hunched or humpbacked. When nesting, each pair of curlews requires a large territory and is highly sensitive to disturbance. As the modern world, in particular rural development, the proliferation of non-native forestry plantations and the intensification of agriculture has encroached upon and fragmented these once wild spaces, the curlew's breeding success has plummeted. The introduction of invasive non-native predators, such as the American mink, has compounded the situation, as have the effects of our shifting climate. The curlew, it seems, does not cope well with change. The Eurasian curlew, or Numenius arquata, to give it its scientific name, is one of eight closely related curlew species found, or at least once found, around the world. Niall Hatch of Birdwatch Ireland has been fascinated by curlews ever since he was a small child. He believes that the fate of some of these other curlew species may give us an insight into why our own curlew has declined so rapidly, as well as a stark warning of what may happen if we don't take urgent action to save it.
We know that the curlew has declined massively here in Ireland, and very rapidly indeed. The same is actually true for curlew populations in other parts of the world. This species, the Eurasian curlew, is actually found all across Europe and much of Asia as well, all the way from Ireland right across through Siberia and even as far as Japan even. Now, across that huge range, the bird has shown huge declines in the last 20 years especially. So something is clearly going wrong with the species as a whole. We know some of the reasons that they've declined here in Ireland. It's due to habitat loss. It's due to disturbance, these kind of factors. But there must be more at play as well, because it's happening in areas where these really aren't issues for the bird. There seems to be some problem perhaps related to climate change. There may be problems related to afforestation across parts of its range in Siberia, where people are planting trees where they shouldn't have been. These kind of things. But there's a warning sign there, because this species really is on the brink in a lot of the world. And there are several other species of curlew, very closely related to our Eurasian curlew, that have actually gone past that brink and have disappeared forever. So a prime example of that is a bird called the Eskimo curlew, which is a species that was found breeding in Arctic areas in northern Canada and used to migrate then down to the pampas of South America. And doing that, it would migrate through the centre of the United States. And back at the start of the 19th century, that was actually the commonest wading bird that would migrate through the United States. The numbers were seen in hundreds of thousands, maybe even flocks of millions. And the bird was taken for granted. It was hunted massively until it reached the point that the species just suddenly started to disappear. And the last confirmed record for certain was in Texas in the 1950s, and no bird has been seen since. Somewhat closer to home, there's another example, a really tragic one, a bird called the slender-billed curlew, a very close relative of our Eurasian curlew. This is a species that we think bred somewhere in Central Asia. The breeding grounds were never actually found. What we do know is, at the start of the 18th century, it was the most common wader migrating through Italy. It would head down to the Mediterranean basin and be there in big numbers, and again was hunted in huge numbers because of that. The very last one in existence was in the early 1990s in Morocco. The species hasn't been seen since then. So we've seen examples with the Eskimo curlew and with the slender-billed curlew that these birds can go from being super abundant to extinct virtually overnight.
But there must be reasons why they became extinct, Niall. If you know these birds are missing, why are they missing?
Well, it all boils down to human activity. In the case of the Eskimo curlew, and possibly also the slender-billed curlew, overhunting seems to have played a big role there. That's less of a problem for our Eurasian curlew, although hunting does happen with that species in some countries still. Thankfully, it's off the hunting list now in Ireland. But it seems to be that these species just can't cope well with human pressures. It's often thought that perhaps the main downfall of the Eskimo curlew in the Americas was actually the destruction of the pampas and the grasslands where these birds would overwinter and where they'd migrate through in the United States as well. More cattle came in, more crops were planted, the habitat became less suitable for them. With the slender-billed curlew from Central Asia, we know less about that bird because, as I said, its breeding grounds were never discovered, so we don't really know what its full breeding biology was. But it may well have been draining of wetlands, increased pressure at wintering areas where it would feed on coastal marshes. That may have caused a pressure for it there that eventually meant it couldn't survive any longer. So I think we have to look at our curlew here in Ireland and in Europe and see that it's facing some very similar pressures. A lot of the habitats that it used to take for granted and that we used to take for granted have gone forever, and that really pushes these birds to the brink. The curlew really likes bogland, moorland. It likes areas covered in heather, extensive blanket bog, upland areas too. It will also breed in lowland areas, but it does need large expanses of undisturbed, low vegetation, quite wet ground, so it can actually then survey the area and keep an eye out for predators. That's where it feels most comfortable. It's actually quite difficult to find curlew when they're breeding because they're very secretive. They call, but they have this ability to almost throw their voices, so they're very hard to pin down, which means surveying them during the breeding season can be quite difficult. And of course, the decline and the disappearance of curlews in Ireland has been masked, especially in the autumn and the winter, because we actually still get a lot of curlew travelling to Ireland. It's a very important migratory destination for lots of curlew that breed in Northern Europe. So many of the curlew that would breed in, let's say, Scotland or Scandinavia or Northern Russia, they come to Irish estuaries and wetlands to spend the winter, to find lots of food there. So as it stands, the curlew still isn't a very difficult bird to find in Ireland during the winter time if you know where to go. And I think that, unfortunately, this has actually masked the decline from a lot of birdwatchers and academics as well. It's still thought of as a fairly common bird. But unfortunately, it isn't. It's disappearing. The numbers are going down and down. So our core breeding population in Ireland is in trouble, but that wintering population is declining as well. And this feeds into and comes from a general decline in wintering water birds here in Ireland. We've seen a massive decline in over 40% in the last 20 years in Ireland, which is huge.
Why can't they adapt?
Well, they're not built that way. In the same way that, you know, if all of the land became flooded and we humans had a hard time surviving, you might say, well, why can't humans adapt and have gills and be able to breathe water? It's the same for the curlew. They're not designed to live in an environment that's so altered by humans. They need to have big expanses of moorland where they can find food, where they're safe and secure from predators, and then also where they can migrate and spend time in the coast as well. That's very important that they have this whole life cycle. And we humans are just encroaching on that too much. Certain birds just don't do well with disturbance. The birds that we tend to think of as our common garden birds, they're the birds that do cope well with human disturbance. They've done very well out of human beings and our altering of the planet. A good example of that would be the swallow. Presumably human activity has led to a big increase in swallows since the dawn of agriculture because we chopped down lots of the forests and created fields and farmlands, which the swallow actually thrives in. So that's benefited from human destruction and human altering of the landscape. The curlew is one of the ones on the other side. It doesn't benefit from the draining of marshland, the cutting of the peat bogs and the draining of all these wetlands. It suffers from hunting in certain parts of the Mediterranean, so that's a pressure on it as well. Its migratory journeys are getting harder and harder because many birds wouldn't survive migration anyway. It's just really survival of the fittest. So those that aren't absolutely in peak condition just simply won't survive that migratory journey. They just perish. And it's many factors hitting them at once.
In 1492, Columbus's ships were 65 days out from Spain. Mm-hmm. And the crew were getting very worried, and there was dangers of mutiny because they were terrified. They didn't know where they were going. He didn't know either. There was just sea and more sea and more sea. What did they see? Suddenly, only huge flocks of birds. Curlews. flying south from North America to South America on migration. And of course, once you saw these birds, you knew land can't be far away. That's rescue. We're going to make it after all. Now, actually, it was a very tragic thing in a way, because these curlews were seeing Europeans for the first time. The Europeans who would eventually render their species totally extinct in North America. They were Eskimo curlews, slightly different from our ones, but close relatives. And the last one was seen around 1963. So these unfortunate curlews, of which there were millions of it in North America, were wiped out in their millions for food. They were very tame from the very far north. They had no fear of people and they were easy to approach, and they were shot and destroyed, and the whole thing went to pot and they destroyed the species completely.
In Ireland, the curlew has long been more than just another bird. It has become a symbol of nature itself. It speaks to us of wilderness and of a connection with something bigger. Something that has long fascinated Dr. Richard Collins.
Well, now the curlew for me is a highly romantic bird. It is the romantic hero, a doomed romantic hero of popular culture in Europe for the last few centuries. Now,
why?
When I was a child, we went to the West for a month every year. We spent a month in the West of Ireland every year. My father was a great fisherman, and I used to fish for flounder and wrasse and things like this. And the sounds of that time was the curlew, this lovely, mournful call. It's a very mournful call. It's a very sad call. It kind of epitomises for me the kind of sad Ireland I grew up in, the 1940s and 50s, kind of depressed, great inferiority complex Ireland had in those days. That's all gone, but I can remember it vividly. And the curlew, the sound of the curlew at night, very much evoked that, the deserted village in Achill Island, the famine and the tragedy of the past. And it's kind of epitomised in this. And the cry and the call, the song. It's at human level pitch. It's a very human song. It appeals to us because this is a very big bird. Its song kind of has a resonance with us. It's about our frequency of speech. And of course, being a big bird, big things are vulnerable. The elephant now is the largest land mammal, and the curlew is the largest European wader. And both have their problems. Big things are conspicuous. They can't hide away on the nest or elsewhere. And the poor old curlew is in the firing line a bit. I'm sad for him. Curlew is a kind of a romantic name. And the Latin name it has, Numenius Arquata. Well, now, Neo means new, and Mene is the moon in Greek. So it's the bird of the new moon, which is kind of what the bill, the curved bill, looks like. And Arquata means the bow bird. Now, in other words, that too is a bow. It does seem to carry the bow. It's a very romantic name for a very romantic creature, do you see? Well, now, the bill itself is interesting because the female's bill is actually longer than the male's. It's like the elephant. The elephant has a trunk. Well, the curlew's trunk is its bill. The elephant can feel with the end of its trunk. It can grab with the end of its trunk. And the curlew, likewise, has its nose extended, like the elephant's trunk, its bill, and it can feel with the tip of it, and it can pull up worms and mollusks and things from deep in the mud by touch alone. It's flexible, because I used to wring them, and they're flexible, rubbery bills. They're marvellous birds to hold in the hand. But the female bill is longer than her mate's. Once you catch them, you just measure the length of the bill to find out is it a male or a female. And the females clock in at something like 14 centimetres or something like that, whereas the males are only 13. And this is a very clever such strategy, because it means the male feeds at a slightly different depth to the female, which is a very interesting thing. They don't then take a bit out of each other's mouth. It's very clear. And the curve is interesting, because suppose you come along and you want to, there's a big walking stick sticking out of your nose, and you want to probe the ground with that walking stick. Well, now you imagine yourself pushing down with the walking stick towards the mud. The straightness of the walking stick would make it difficult to penetrate it, but if that
was curved. The curve would follow the arc of your head as it went down. And when it got down, there's an advantage, because you can turn the bill when it's below, and the tip of it will describe a kind of circle. So you'll be able to net anything which is in the orbit of the tip of the bill when you turn it down in the mud. Nature, evolution, provided that extraordinary bill.
Until recently, the curlew was taken for granted. It was known that numbers had dropped somewhat, as they had for many bird species. But decent flocks of curlews could still be seen gathering at traditional wintering feeding sites along the coast. As Eric Dempsey said, the vast majority of these overwintering curlews were migrants from elsewhere in Europe, and their presence masked the true status of our core resident Irish breeding population. It came as a huge shock, therefore, when survey work carried out by Birdwatch Ireland for the 2007 to 2011 Bird Atlas project revealed that Ireland's breeding curlew population had suffered a catastrophic collapse and was on course for total extinction in a matter of a decade or two. The number of breeding pairs had declined by a staggering 97% since the 1980s. It would be tragic if the curlew and its magical cry were to disappear from our landscape forever. The situation looks bleak, but hope is far from lost. Urgent conservation work is underway to pinpoint the reasons for the bird's decline and to develop the most effective ways to save it.
The Irish Breeding Curlew EIP is a European innovation programme that is run and funded by the Department of Agriculture. Its objective is to design and trial agri-environmental solutions to the decline of breeding curlew in Ireland. And with that in mind, we're working very, very closely with farmers in two habitat types in Ireland. So we're project area in the South Leitrim Bogs area, focusing on bogland habitat and adjacent farmland to bogs, and then in Loch Corrib in wet grassland. So we're working very closely with the farming community there to trial agri-environmental solutions to help stem the declines in breeding curlew. So we would be designing and trialling agri-environmental schemes whereby farmers can improve habitat for curlew, for the breeding habitat. They can protect breeding curlew from agricultural damage during the breeding season and also reduce the incidence of predation for breeding curlew.
The Curlew European Innovation Partnership, or Curlew EIP, is a collaboration between Birdwatch Ireland, the Irish Natura and Hill Farmers Association, the Irish Grey Partridge Conservation Trust and Chagosk. In County Offaly, I met with Birdwatch Ireland's Catherine Finney, the Curlew EIP project manager.
Well, depending on which option they're in, we would be advising the farmers, for instance, in some of the habitat options, we would be looking at the quality of the breeding habitat there. So we might be looking for them to reduce their stocking rates. We'd be looking for them to produce a certain type of sward that the curlew like to breed in and that the chicks like to feed in. We'd also be looking for them to, say, potentially remove predator habitat, because if there's predator habitat surrounding where curlew are breeding, it leads to a likelihood of an increase in predation on those, on the nests or the chicks during the breeding season. So sometimes we'd be looking for them to maybe do a little bit of restoration work where potentially the habitat had been damaged previously in the past or isn't in very good shape. We might put in place some restoration. And I think the important thing about this particular scheme is it's a results-based scheme. We know what kind of habitat we want to produce for the curlew. We bring the farmers along with us on that journey. We fully support them with specialist advisory. We show them what we're looking for in their field. So we have seven what we call indicators. And we teach those farmers what we're looking for in each of those indicators. After that, it's largely up to the farmer how well they achieve that. If they achieve it really, really well and they get top marks, they'll get a top score. If they can't for some reason, or they choose not to for some reason, maybe due to the best of their ability, they'll get a lower field score and they'll get a lower payment rate. But the whole premise is that they're supported by specialist advisory, they're given the training, they're given the knowledge, and they're given the know-how to, and what is needed for curlew. So really what you generally tend to find is that whereas farmers might come in on a low field score because their habitat is not great, mm-hmm. over the years, or as the scheme progresses and they learn a bit more and they have more of an understanding of A, their payment rates and also what's required, they tend to ratchet up the field score and up the payment rate. So it's very much encouraging farmers to continue to produce really good habitat for curlew.
Well, the better the habitat, the more money the farmer is going to get. Tell me about the habitat. What type of habitat does the curlew really like?
The thing about curlew is that they are breed in a whole range of habitats in Ireland. So you'll find them in uplands, you'll find them on peatland, you'll find them on lowland wet grassland, and you'll find them in just ordinary damp rushy pasture. You'll find them on grazed land, you'll find them on meadowland. So there's a whole suite of habitats that they will actually breed on, and unfortunately they're under pressure in every single habitat they breed on in Ireland. That's actually one of the reasons why this scheme is, and this pilot has been trialled in two very distinct geographical locations. So we have one in the damp rushy pasture and peatlands of South Leitrim, and we have the other on the wet grass, lowland wet grassland around Loch Corrib, so that we can trial the different mechanisms and see what is needed in both of these areas, so that if we kind of can roll this out on a national level, that we have a suite of measures that are applicable to the different habitats that they breed in. Mm. As a general rule of thumb, curlew are ground nesting species. They like open areas. They don't like to be enclosed by trees or scrub or any kind of scrubby areas, because that's where predators will hide. And they like to be able to see predators coming from very, very far away, so that they can get off their nest. And once they get off the nest, it makes it really hard for a predator to find that nest. Because the chicks are self-feeding, as soon as the chicks hatch, within 24 hours, they leave their nest cup, and the parents aren't really responsible for, they're not responsible for feeding them at all. They do, however, brood them. They will lead them to good feeding spots. They will lead them away from danger, and they'll alert them from danger. And in poor weather, they'll obviously brood them and keep them warm. But because of that, the chicks need very specific habitat in order to be able to feed, because they're tiny. They're just absolute tiny little balls of fluff with big long legs, running around trying to feed themselves. So they need a mix. Generally what we would like for curlew is we'd like a mixed sward. So we'd like areas with shorter sward where they can find the ground dwelling invertebrates that they feed upon easily. Mm-hmm. But we need little bit patches of longer vegetation that they can hide in, and that provides cover from aerial predators such as hooded crow or magpie that might be trying to eat them. They generally like a damp fields, because that's where you're going to find invertebrates. And generally, like, if we can have some damp, muddy pools or kind of exposed mud, if you think about it like this, on a hot, sunny day and you have a muddy pool, it's going to be full of invertebrates. So that's what the kind of habitat that the curlew like to do. So that's one of the things we are also working with farmers with, in areas that maybe the wet features or the chick feeding habitat is not great. We have a mechanism to put in place little kind of what we call wader scrapes. Mm. And they're just like little ponds, very shallow ponds. They don't really impact with the farming enterprise, but they do provide that kind of wet, muddy area for the invertebrates and for the chicks to feed on during the breeding season. Mm.
And how well is that doing? How is it working out for you, all of these projects, and how many people have implemented them?
We're just coming to the end of the first year of having farmers in the scheme. So as I said, there's multiple different options depending on what the farmers are doing. And it's worked very, very well. We are hoping to carry out a big suite of capital works, which would be the habitat restoration elements, early in the next year or kind of after the next year's breeding seasons. So engagement with the farming community has been really positive. They have really come on board. They're really interested in it. Certainly the feedback we would be getting is that they're really enjoying the interaction and the farmer training and this method of delivering an agri-environmental scheme.
When will you begin to see an impact?
I mean, we would hope to see results over in the coming years. This project is only operational until the end of 2021. Mm-hmm. So it'll be very tight time frame to see results in breeding productivity. The results of this project really are going to be felt in if we can design an agri-environmental measure that can be rolled out nationally and that can be implemented nationally to cover all areas that curlew are breeding in. And that will be the real success story of this project, because on a time frame between now, you know, between the start of the project and the end of the project, because curlew are such a long-lived bird and their, you know, productivity from year to year can fluctuate naturally, it's a very short time frame. But certainly we are seeing and we have seen the impacts, and we know that the measures that we are implementing in terms of protection from predators and mitigation from predators and creation of suitable breeding habitat, we know that this does actually have a benefit, and we know that this can turn around productivity. From work both curlew, you know, in other parts, on other projects nationally through CAB and the Curlew Conservation Project, also through projects internationally, and through work with other breeding wader species, because there's a lot of overlap between what curlew need and what some other breeding wader species need as well. So we have a huge amount of knowledge in what we need to achieve to try and increase productivity for these birds. And we're very hopeful. I mean, we really are very, very hopeful. So this is about just finding a route to a successful delivery mechanism to roll this out nationally, so that all breeding curlew nationally are surrounded by this suite of agri-environmental measures, with farmers working to their benefit and working to create the suitable habitat for them, to reduce the impacts of predation on them. I mean, if you have all of that in place, then the future does look bright.
A state curlew task force was also established in 2016. With the express aim of reversing the decline of the species as an Irish breeding bird. This has led to the setting up of a dedicated curlew conservation programme by the National Parks and Wildlife Service, involving teams of advisors, community engagement and nest protection officers.
So for some time there was concerns about the decline in the curlew population in Ireland. People were seeing that there was less curlew calling during the spring and the summertime, but nobody actually knew the extent to which the curlews had declined until we undertook a national survey. And that survey showed that Ireland had lost 97% of its breeding curlews since the 1980s. That's a massive decline. It's a decline that is on the scale of the entire human population of Ireland being wiped out. If you think about 1990, when Packy Bonner was making that penalty save, there was 5,000 pairs roughly breeding on the island of Ireland. And today, there are no more than 150 pairs. It's a massive decline, a calamitous decline. It's equivalent to the entire human population of Ireland disappearing, and all that were left would be the people living in Cork City. That's the scale of the decline in the breeding curlew in Ireland.
Dr. Barry O'Donoghue is head of the Agri-Ecology Unit with the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
So that 97% decline is shocking to many of us. Like, this is a bird that would have kept us company on grey winter days by the shore. It would have made our hearts sing in the summer meadows and in the bogs. It's part of us. It's a link to our grandparents and to their grandparents. They would have experienced the same calls as we could experience today. But the big question is whether our grandchildren or even our children will ever know what Ireland sounded like with curlews as part of the landscape and countryside. So to address that, to try to save the last remaining curlew in Ireland, we need to understand, well, what is the reason behind the decline in the curlew? So we found that some of the bigger changes in the landscape that had happened since the late 1980s, early 1990s, since our grandparents' times, would have been the intensification and homogenisation of agriculture and the advent of forestry on the landscape that the curlew would have bred on. And now people might consider, well, aren't trees good for nature? Well, of course they can be, but the right tree in the right place, as they say. And there has been a certain amount of industrial-type plantation forestry planted in the wet grasslands and in the important areas for the curlew. But it's not great for curlew or other open landscape species such as the grouse or the hen harrier or the skylark. These species have evolved over millennia in habitats that are open. They don't live in closed canopy plantations. We then wanted to engage with the various stakeholders. We went about setting up a curlew task force, and that brought together all the stakeholders from all the different industries and government as well, and NGOs, and everybody came together in solidarity with the curlew to establish, well, how can we help the curlew? And that set aside recommendations outlining what needed to happen by way of policy for the curlew. Meanwhile, we needed to also engage on the ground with the curlew that were remaining, and we set up in 2017 the Curlew Conservation Programme. And the Curlew Conservation Programme is a pilot scheme working with landowners across 9 different geographical areas in Ireland. In those areas, we have curlew action teams that are engaging directly and working hand in hand with the landowners, working hand in hand with the farmers, with local communities, with the turf cutters, with the gun clubs, finding where the curlew are and trying to safeguard their nests and trying to enhance their habitats. To date, we're seeing some positive signs through the actions of the curlew conservation programme on the ground. The breeding productivity has increased since we've engaged with the landowners and the gun clubs and had our teams on the ground trying to protect the curlew. But this is on a relatively small scale, and we need to upscale this, and we need to address the various issues that still remain on our landscape if we are to see the curlew remaining as a sight and a sound on our landscape for future generations. We need to engage with our partners across Britain and Europe, because it's part of the overall curlew population. And Ireland is in a really important place in that it would be on the western extreme of the curlew's breeding range. So if we lose curlew from Ireland, then the entire global population of the Eurasian curlew will have shrunk. So Ireland is being looked at from an international perspective as a very important site to retain our curlew. And we're engaged with the UK and Ireland Curlew Action Group and other partners abroad so that we can network and share information with one another.
Since curlews can be found in Ireland throughout the whole year, it can easily be forgotten that they are migratory birds. We have already discussed how we receive a large influx of curlews each winter, consisting of birds which have flown here from Northern Europe. But the sadly dwindling number of curlews that comprises our summer breeding population is also migratory. Some of these Irish breeders may move only a few kilometres after the nesting season has ended, from upland bogs to the coast. Others travel almost the entire length of our island, and some even migrate to the continent. We still have a lot to learn about the comings and goings of Ireland's curlews. What is clear, however, is that these birds move around a lot more than one might assume. As is the case with other wildlife, they don't recognise borders. If this species is to be saved, an all-Ireland approach is needed. Kendrew, what's going on here today?
We are a very exciting day because the culmination of 2 months' work, whereby we are going to check our wee birds are okay, the 2 curlews, and we're going to release them into the big wide world for the first time.
In August 2020, I travelled to Portmore Loch, a nature reserve run by the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds in County Antrim. I was there to witness a new technique called headstarting, aimed at boosting the productivity of Northern Ireland's declining curlew population. Dr. Kendrew Calhoun is a researcher with the Loch Ney Curlew Project.
In the southwest corner of Loch Ney, the Loch Ney Partnership have a project running on landscape restoration, which curlew emerged, to our surprise, as a really important species. The last breeding pairs in the whole Loch Ney Basin currently are in this area of southwest Loch Ney. It's a little distant from here, and we've been working now for 2 summers researching those birds. So we're GPS tracking them, we're looking at their nesting success, we're looking at reasons for failures of nests, and so on. And that's kind of where this is. This hasn't been by design, this has been a kind of emergency measure. In the course of that work, where we've actually had to make a very tough decision, can we sit back and watch these birds potentially perish?
You say emergency measure, what happened exactly?
So we were doing a research in a section of bogland, state-owned bogland. We had predator fence around the first nest, and there was so much burning of the bog going on almost daily, and we basically had to take a decision with advice from the Environment Agency, from Fire Service in Northern Ireland, that the acute risk to the bog going up was such that we couldn't not do anything. We had to, can we sit back and see this nest disappear, or what?
And the adults can fly away, the eggs are stuck there.
Totally perished, and potentially the adults, who knows, they might sit to the last minute, they might get burned. So we ended up having to make a tough decision, and we got ourselves organised in terms of the facility we'd have to have, the incubators, the levels of hygiene, a storage mechanism to transport them. Aided, I have to say, by the fact that Kerry, who works with me on the project, as a trained aviculturist, so, you know, hatching eggs is something that he totally knows about.
Okay.
So, you know, fair credit to Kerry. Those eggs needed constant attention.
Mm-hmm.
The incubators automatically roll the egg. The stuff that a wild bird does innately, humans obviously have learned to do this stuff. Wildfire Wetlands Trust and across the water are experts at this. In fact, in raising curlew chicks, they've really cracked it. And we had already got a lot of information for them prior to this on what would be required. So we had a kind of head start on what were the essential components to take it from the stage in the field to this stage.
Okay, where we are today. So yes. How many eggs did you take?
We took one clutch of four eggs.
Yeah.
And then within a week, we discovered another clutch of eggs in the same bog about 400 yards away, so facing the same threat. So we again consulted and we were told we could lift them as well.
So how many in total?
Eight eggs.
And how many hatched?
So we had three hatched eggs from both clutches. So there's one inviable egg in each clutch. So we had three surviving chicks in each clutch.
And how many had survived? You'd already released
five.
Them. That's fantastic.
Well, so compared to the wild situation, Derek,
so
it is
you've
phenomenal.
Already pre-released how many?
Three.
Three. So two today.
Two today, and that's the full complement.
And how old are they now?
About 40, 45 days, something like that.
Well, this is very exciting. I'm really looking forward to this. Shall we get on with it?
Absolutely.
Kendrew and his team took these eggs just as the nests were about to be destroyed by a peatland blaze. They then incubated, hatched, and raised the chicks in captivity before releasing them to bolster the wild population. Thanks to this head start in life, their survival to fledging had been assured, and it is hoped that in time they will return to the area to breed themselves.
We're up at this pen, Derek, this is this 8x8 meter pen, and we are now dismantling the panel so that we're going to move this panel, and this 4 meter wide gap is the one that the birds will walk, slide or fly out of. We just have to see what they're going to do, but I think they're going to fly because there's a lot of wind today. They fly into the wind, and that is our big moment. You only get one take at this, of course.
They look like they're itching to go.
Definitely. You can see they're fit and healthy. They've got individually engraved colour rings. So all of the five birds, Derek, that we're releasing have these stripe rings on one leg. So that's their absolute identifier that they're captive reared birds of these curlews. So, you know, it has to be an approved scheme. And then they've got an individually lettered ring on the other leg, which is unique to the individual. And then that means that whenever these birds are observed by the public, it could be in Donegal, it could be in County Down, it could be in Sweden, wherever, we will be able to monitor their movements. And, you know, it'd be amazing that if we can follow up in the next few months and years, that where our birds, and obviously that's how we'll know if these birds are coming back here to breed, which is the ultimate aim.
Now, do you know if they're male or female?
Don't know. We will know when they're bigger, because by size and by their bill length, we will know. Female curlews, much bigger, noticeably bigger bird, and noticeably longer bill. So we can't tell that for now.
With the enclosure partly dismantled, it wasn't long before the first brave curlew stepped outside and took its first flight to freedom. And to the delight of a few key project members and invited press, it was soon followed by its remaining sibling. There is nothing more delightful than the sight and sound of a curlew in flight. The curlew, and in particular its haunting call, have found a special place in our national heritage.
Thanks to all of the contributors who took part in the making of that very special programme about the curlew. More details on the website rte.ie/Mooney. Time for music now as we go to Studio 8 in the RTE studios in Donnybrook and say good morning to Donal Lunny and Paddy Glacken.
Well, thank you very much, Derek. That was indeed a very, very interesting programme about the curlew. I don't know, Donal, whether you've had much experience of the curlew in your growing up around Newbridge or wherever.
Yes, in Newbridge, but I would say more particularly in Donegal, because beyond the sea there, you know, and the curlew would be feeding on the strands. Oh, the plaintive call of the curlew is a lovely thing in itself, that long note, yes. Rising note, that it's such a shock that the curlew has vanished to such an extent that it's, what, 90-something percent of the curlew population.
I love the sound of the curlew myself when I'm out walking in Clontarf, particularly when, you know, when the tide is out and you hear the curlew. And indeed, a great friend of ours many years ago, John Kelly, he was a great man for the curlew. He used to always say that the certain music had a call of the curlew in it.
Oh, brilliant.
Maybe we'll play a tune dedicated to the curlew. It's called The Curlew Reel, and we'll follow it with another tune called The Bird on the Bush. But the curlew reel itself was composed by a great fiddle player and piano player by the name of Josephine Keegan.
Great.
Well, that was our celebration of the curlew. And my name is Paddy Glacken, and I'm playing the fiddle. And with me here is Donal Lunny, who's playing the boron and the bouzouki. And we're going to play another couple of reels for you now. And this tune is a really well-known tune amongst traditional musicians, a tune called The Bird on the Bush. But I think, Donal, you like this particular version of it because it has Donegal connections.
Nearly Boyle.
Nearly Boyle, a man from a place called Cronashalloch outside Dunlow.
Yeah,
who was a really serious fiddle player. He was really, really highly regarded and was one of the first fiddle players to play on 2RN.
That's fantastic,
But he was a player who influenced a whole generation of musicians.
I heard around the country. I heard a recording of
spectacular fiddle player. So this is his version of The Pigeon on the Gate.
Yeah, I did hear a recording of him some years ago. Of Nearly himself.
Yes.
And it must have been made, what, late 40s or early 50s, something like that.
Yeah. He did make commercial recordings.
Yeah.
All right, at the time. Right. Anyway, this is his version of The Pigeon.
Deadly.
And the second one is called Jenny Pickin' Cockles.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much indeed, Paddy Glacken and Donal Lunny. We'll come back to you for more music later. Let's